Hello and welcome to Shelf Respect, the book podcast focused on both craft and chaos of fiction. I'm Knox McCoy. Joining me as always, two people who want to make you bark like a dog in the name of love. It's Gina Golden Aaron Moon. That didn't happen in the book, right? In Wuthering Heights? That's just a movie adaptation?
That is just the movie adaptation. That is okay. Correct.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Nobody's
brain. That's only like Emerald Fennell's brain.
Yeah.
Fennell?
Maybe no. She'll release Fennell. A new cut and it'll come out. The barking like a dog.
God, can we get Wuthering Heights 2, colon, yeah. Electric Boogaloo?
Electric Boogaloo.
Bark like a dog.
Okay, in this episode, we will be snake drafting toxic literary romances.
But before we do that, do you wish you could know every book we've talked about on the show and click once to purchase it and also support your local indie bookstore without even having to put on pants? Well, congratulations, you can. If you go to bookshop.org, we have a store, little storefront there. You can go to bookshop.org/shop/shelfrespect, and the link is in the show notes. Look, here's what's great. You get to support two small businesses when you purchase your books from bookshop.org. The first is you get to support the indie bookstore of your choice. They have 2,500 stores linked. You just find the one that you love. It could be the one nearest to your house. It also could be the one that, like, where you met your lover in college, whatever. But they've raised more than $45 million for those indie bookstores, which is amazing. And then you also get to support our business, because even though you pay like a regular price, if you use our links, we get a little cut, and they have raised $45 for our small business. So thank you. So thank you for shopping bookshop.org. By the way, just some of the list are we have our 2025 book superlatives. We've got a few of our favorite villain books, books that defined us, romance books based on tropes we love, and many more lists. So again, go to the link in the show notes and support two small businesses that you love.
So, Jamie, what you're saying is that if someone were looking for a list of the books that we talk about in the episode, they would be found in this place.
That's right. And we label each list because it's not just a random shop where it's just all the books. It's like there's a list called BookTender.
Curated, y'all.
It's curated. BookTender, March 20th. Because look, here's the thing. I don't like being spoiled. I don't want to be spoiled in the show notes on the BookTender episode where I'm like, well, why did they talk about the Dream Hotel? I don't want to be spoiled about that. I want it to be a surprise as I listen. And I know some of you read the last chapter of the book first, but for the rest of us, we like to enjoy it as a journey. Yeah. And so you can find all the episode books there. And unless we're like randomly referencing a book, that will be in the show notes. But anytime we're doing like a really set of books like Trope Detective, The Chosen One, you don't want to be spoiled by the show notes. So we put it all there. Plus, are you mad about supporting a small business that supports other small businesses?
Why are you mad?
Why are you so mad?
Yeah.
This is one person, by the way. This is one person. She knows we're talking to her. Yeah.
Okay. So like we said, we're going to be snake drafting toxic literary romances. This was prompted by the Wuthering Heights movie that we referenced at the top. I was thinking about it, and from the movie, I was like, I don't think this is toxic romance. I think these are two weird people who have a weird relationship that doesn't make it toxic. If I grew up in a place where people got super horned up during public executions, I can't also be asked to have a normal romantic love kind of relationships with people. That would be my case.
I do think you're right, because I think in a lot of books, it's one of them is super weird.
Yeah.
Like, and the Bride of Frankenstein's just there and being like, what? I'm just trying to love. But in this situation, it's like you've got Heathcliff who's like, I would like to be buried next to Catherine because I want our remains to mingle.
Yeah.
But also Catherine's like, our souls, they're the same. Here's my other husband that I married instead of you. You know, it's
so tough. I don't think it's toxic. I think it is just constrained by the conditions of the time. That's all it is. Okay. That's all it is, guys. But despite that, we will be talking about toxic literary romances. We do need to draw for picks. So today's category on drawing for picks is going to be The War in Iran. I'm going to say it correctly because this is the book podcast. How's it going to end, guys? How's it going to end? Your options are
no.
More war, peace, or enemies to lovers.
Oh,
Aaron, you got first pick.
Wait, who? Me?
Yep, yeah. That's
okay.
You.
I'm going to choose the heart wants what the heart wants, and I'm going to choose peace.
Peace. Okay. You have got the third pick.
Yeah, you do. That is the third option.
That makes sense, frankly.
So, JB, do you pick more war, or at the end of this, it's us and Iran were like, oh, we actually loved each other the whole time. Like, listen, let's build a new world
together. I'm actually going to choose enemies to lovers because perhaps maybe it may not happen now. Maybe it's a slow burn. Maybe it takes 2.5 years for that to happen. But yeah. I will say enemies to lovers. Yeah.
Well, that's going to get you the first pick in the draft.
Wow. Yeah! Congratulations.
So well done. I have more war, which gives me the second one. So, Jamie, you will be kicking us off. As much as I want Aaron to pick first in this one, just to see what kind of insane first pick of the draft.
Is it a couple that chuckles? Because it's so toxic. Okay, my first pick, this was hard because obviously what I would normally start every snake draft with when it comes to toxicity is the Little Mermaid, but yeah. I have decided to make that an also-ran because I have talked at length about how problematic Hans Christian Andersen and Disney are when it comes to that dumb mermaid. But I am actually going to start with one of the first book projects I ever did in elementary school was I had to build Miss Havisham's house from Great Expectations by Charles Dickens. And so it's going to be Miss Havisham and I pronounced it in junior high, Compaisson.
Oh, with the like with the accent and everything. Oh, I love that.
I was like, how could you be so sad if you love someone so deeply and their name be Compeyson? Like, that can't be right. So it has to be Compeyson. So obviously it's toxic because he abandons her at the altar. He literally, like, he sends a letter. He doesn't even go in person. He sends a letter. She gets it at, as we know, 8:40 a.m. because that's where she stops all the clocks. Let's talk about all the problems that come from this letter, which is basically, I broke up with you via text in ancient times. Okay. She never changes her clothes. She stays in that wedding dress. Look, I get it. I know a lot of you, when you get married, your favorite thing to do on your anniversary is post a picture of you and your hot.
It's the hottest you've ever looked, Jamie. You don't understand.
I get it. It's the hottest you've ever looked. But that is not that's not the energy Miss Havisham is bringing to the table. Mainly it's yellowing and rotting with age. Pip even says she looks like she's in a decaying ghost costume. She also lets that wedding feast, which was already set up. Compaisson. What are you doing?
The French.
So she's got a table full of what I assume is just like a pig's body that's just rotting on the table. She never opens the curtains. And then she decides, you know what? I am going to adopt a little girl named Estella, and I'm going to raise her to manipulate and reject men. And obviously we know later that that Compeyson was not only bad at trying to get married, but he was also a swindler, right? Because he was working with her half-brother to get her wealth. And so across the board, this is classic toxic, because she also, girl, you got to take a hot bath and get your arse together. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can't let this man define the rest of your life. He wasn't even that. Was he that good in bed? No one is. Not to keep on a dress the rest of your life. Like, yeah. You've got to change clothes. Yeah. So that is my first snake draft pick.
You know, we had a Great Expectations project as well in school.
Yeah, you did.
And we got to, for extra credit, you could make and decorate a Miss Havisham wedding cake. And it was awesome because then everybody brought cake to class. And
love the cake.
Yeah, it was awesome.
What you should have done is brought the cake and then get to eat it 3 months later.
Yeah.
While it just sat next to the class frog, you know, in the aquarium.
That would have been a good idea. That would have been more realistic.
I feel like people make school projects so difficult when it's like, it should be short. It should involve food.
Yeah.
And at least demonstrate that you've worked on this more than 2 nights. You'll get an A every time if you do that.
Yeah, more 100%. Than 2 nights?
Yeah.
That's not a Jamie Golden approach. It is.
That's why you're not getting a guaranteed A. You know?
That's true. It's one night and it's stay up all night and do it.
Yeah.
And then regret and say, I'm never going to do that again. And then do it every time.
Knox, sure. As a parent, have you ever done your child's project for them?
Oh, yeah. And, okay. And let me be clear. It is not because I wanted my child to get a good grade.
Yeah.
Because it was like, move. This is so much quicker and easier if I do it.
Yeah.
Rather than coaching you on how to, hot glue a piece of something like Gibraltar to the map. Like, just get out of the way and let me do it. Gah. Have you done that, Aaron?
Yeah. Holland had to do she had to make an atom. So the one that she did was calcium.
Yeah.
And I was like, what you should do is you should get like floss and pieces, like those little teeth holders that the nurse gives you when you lose your tooth in the at school.
Yeah.
And we'll make it out of that. And she was like, yeah, let's do that. And so I bought like a butt ton of floss and a butt ton of those like little things. And then she was like, I don't know how to do this. I can't figure this out. And I was like, just move. I'll do it. It's fine. I have the artistic vision
and what
here.
Lesson, and what lesson did both of you think you passed on
probably
to your children?
Probably not great lessons, Jamie.
That someone will jump in and do a better job than you will ever do.
No, so. Projects are stupid. Fair. Look, the only thing, I'm like, you can want this to be better. Like, it's okay. It's cool to be good at stuff. But my kids are like, shut up. I'm doing the bare minimum. I'm like, I get it. They do trick me. They'll be like, hey, can you look over? I had to turn in two paragraphs.
Yeah, I've been tricked by that too.
They manipulate you like en passant.
They're just like, I'm not asking you to write it. Just look it over. Yeah. And there's obvious punctuation issues.
So egregious.
Does Gen Z punctuate? They don't. It's
tough having parents who are writers. Like, it is tough having parents who are writers.
Just got to add a little contextual, a positive here. So comma, da 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 da. And it's just like, I got it.
Just a little flair. That's all.
It's tough.
Just a little flair.
Okay, second pick in this draft. I'm trying to think where I want to go here. I think I'm going to go. I'm going to go first pick. Okay, I'm going to go Charlotte's Web.
Oh,
I've got a love triangle. It's not just a toxic
romance.
Nobody
loves Charlotte's Web. Like, not it's away.
No, I don't. That's the problem.
That's what I mean. Like, the link's talking about it. Like, you do. Well, it imprinted on you.
If you watch Blue Moon, the movie with Ethan Hawke, the Oscar nominee, E.B. White shows up. In Blue Moon, and they have like a conversation about stuff, and Ethan Hawke's character's like, hey, funny story about a mouse in my kitchen, and you realize that like that's how E.B. White got the idea for Stuart Little, but he's a good character in that movie. But I love this book because it's so insane and all the relationships are just bat crazy. It's not a toxic romance, it's a toxic love triangle between Charlotte, Wilbur, and the concept of emotional manipulation, because everything seems so like noble and nice and lovely and sacrificial. That's not the case. Everyone is just manipulating everyone else. Wilbur is the runt of the litter. He's small and he's useless, which makes Fern feel bad for him, and that's his only move. Because otherwise, like, he can't be a prize hog in the conventional sense because he's just too small. He has like no skills. He can't fight. He doesn't do math. Like, he just literally does nothing. His like almost the blank canvas, the tabula rasa of his whole thing is his only skill. And Charlotte recognizes that. Why does she recognize that? Because she's a spider, which gross, disgusting. Don't trust you. Okay. Yeah. So she's clearly having to overcome that vibe by being super nice, super accommodating to everyone. Oh, you want me to redeem you through the message of written word? I'll do that. No problem. I'm pregnant and a single mom, but I'll take that on, big guy. No problem. So both of them need something. And beyond like the reputational laundering, Charlotte's like, I need an ally for me and my spider babies coming down the road.
Yeah.
And even Wilbur can't really do that. He kind of subcontracts that out too because he's so useless.
Maybe he's just a really, really great delegator.
He's a great middle manager.
Maybe he's navigating trauma because everyone's casually talking about how pigs are slaughtered and he can hear them. Like, maybe that's it.
They are, except for him, who gets bathed in like buttermilk because he's so useless, which is insane. And even like the family, they only see like the possibility at the fair for Wilbur and like what they can get from him and everything. And even Fern, she sees it like, as Wilbur's like a childhood device. But everyone is like manipulating everyone else for whatever they can get out of it. And I think it's one of the most toxic examples of romance in children's literature. And I appreciate it for that. It tells kids, like, get ready, because this is how the world
is. Hard knocks are coming, because listen, you're going to get attached to your dead best friend's kids. They're all leaving. Like, all those spiders, like, fly away. Like, they balloon away.
This story's attempt to be like, spider babies are cool. Spider babies are fine. No, they're not.
Did spiders write this? It's not okay.
No.
Did Big Spider fund this?
To take care of this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Aaron, you now have a back-to-back.
Okay, I'm going first. Listen, there is one toxic romance that has been immortalized in books, in film, And everybody just, they love to quote this, that they love to quote it. They love to put memes up about it, whatever. And this is Samwise Gamgee and Frodo freaking Baggins.
Oh, listen, yeah.
I need Sam to, yeah, I need Sam to gather some strength, some moral turpitude, and I need him to get some boundaries. Like, he almost dies multiple times. He has to murder a giant spider, which that's traumatic. His friend leads him into dangerous situations constantly with no regard for his own safety. He's so self-manipulated that he is like, I made a promise, Mr. Frodo, a promise. Sam, sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we promise things that we, upon further reflection, we go, well, maybe this wasn't the best choice for me. Maybe I made this irrationally. And so he had to give up Bill the Pony, which he was really sad about, but they had to because of freaking Frodo. His best friend does not insist. He refers to him as Mr. Frodo, like throughout the entire thing.
Thank you. You're, that's your friend. Don't call him Mr. What is this?
Mr. What are you doing? My favorite thing, because I was on the Reddit, the Lord of the Rings Reddit, like kind of reading through some, like just trying to refresh my memory a little bit. And Jim the Johnny. Okay. Jim the Johnny said, bruh, anyone would have just leaved Frodo instead of piggyback him to the top of that volcano. And the wisdom of Reddit.
The wisdom of Jim the Johnny.
Frodo's so annoying and he's so weak. And Sam is just doing, he's just like his emotional and physical midwife at every point. And I want better for Sam.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I go with you this whole time.
Yeah.
I'm burdened by you the entire time. You are emotionally cut off from me. You will not share any thoughts with me.
Yeah.
And then you're just going to leave at the end? Like, you're going to go to the West?
Crazy.
That's crazy.
Like, I gave up my life for you.
Yeah. I don't like that.
See, is that what makes it toxic? Is that Sam doesn't have anything else cooking and has like no stature in his own mind of himself. So he's like, I got to do this.
Yeah. He has
I had Bill the horse, and now that's gone. So my only move now is,
and now what do I do?
I got to sit in the cuck chair of this magical ring and just watch this happen.
That's exactly
right. Or is Sam an Enneagram 2 that's very unhealthy? And
that's also toxic behavior. So yeah, I think that's true. I just think like he didn't give him, he used him. Frodo used Sam.
Well, sometimes people let you use them.
And they shouldn't. And Frodo should know better.
Frodo should know better. But I did feel like Frodo occasionally was like, Sam, boundaries. Like, I got to do this on my own. And he was like, but what? I have no purpose if it's not to be
There's
needed
some
by
good
you.
In this See, world, it would have been Mr. better Frodo. If Sam was like,
Mr. Frodo, you have stepped in with your weird toe into my boundary. And I need a break.
I need a break. You need to give me a break. Okay, so that's my first pick. My second pick is Achilles and Patroclus.
Ooh.
I know. Listen, I'd like to make a case that my boys need to go to therapy. So, Jamie, do you know the story of Achilles and Patroclus?
No, but I know I'm going to know it.
You are.
Because one, you're going to tell it now, and it's also being made. The heated rivalry guy is making it into a TV show.
I know. And listen,
is he really? Is that true?
And if Connor's story does not play Achilles, that is a horrendous miscast.
Please let it be so.
Connor's story cannot play Achilles.
What are you talking about?
To be fair,
that'd be like Gary Coleman playing Michael Jordan in a biopic. What are you talking about?
Oh my Get gosh, out of here. You're an insane person.
Listen, was he great on SNL? Yeah, I loved him. Did they write for him? No, they didn't.
No,
but
they
he
did
brought
not.
It to the table. But that's not Achilles, okay?
No, it is Achilles. You,
no.
You have Brad
you
Pitt
have
blinders.
Put your hand down. Put your hand
you
down. Put your hand down. No.
Listen, Knox, you haven't seen Connor's arse. You haven't seen his ass.
You haven't.
You haven't
seen his ass.
I haven't.
That's you fair, haven't seen those
fair
eyes.
Accusations.
God, them tattoos and them all them moles. You haven't seen all his moles. Like I have, me and Aaron have seen all his moles.
I'm just telling you, he's not. He's too slight. He's
no,
too
he's
slight.
No, he's not. No, he's not. He's gonna bulk up. He's gonna bulk up. Anyway, okay. So, all right. Here's the deal. So, Patroclus, or however you want to say it, accidentally kills another boy, and he has to go live with Achilles, right? And Achilles' mom is a sea nymph who does not approve. Okay, he's half human, half god. So Patroclus and Achilles, they love each other, but Achilles is also like really fixated on glory and honor, as men are wont to do. He's like a warrior. He's the best fighter that's ever done the fighting, whatever. So they go to the Trojan War, where one of the generals, Agamemnon, he disrespects Achilles, and then Achilles throws like a little baby back fit, and he won't fight. And meanwhile, Greeks are just dying, just waves of Greeks are dying. So Patroclus is like, everybody knows Achilles is such a great fighter. What I'll do is I'll put on Achilles' armor and I'll go out there, and they'll be so scared just seeing Achilles that we'll push back and we'll be able to regroup or whatever. So Achilles is like, yeah, you can do that. Just like, don't get close to anybody, okay? Because you're not a fighter. You like to play the liar. And so he does that. He's going to let Achilles like keep his moral high ground or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, Patroclus dies, and Achilles is like, I cannot believe this happened. How did it happen? And he goes on an absolute serial killer murder spree. He kills the guy who kills Patroclus. That's Hector. And then like a billion other people. And then he defiles Hector's corpse, which is big no-no, bad. And then Patroclus' ghost comes to Achilles, and he's like, hey, when you die, be sure to mix our ashes in the same urn so we can be together, even though your complete stubbornness and misguided sense of duty 100% was the cause of my death. Then Paris, Hector's brother, shoots Achilles in the heel. He dies. Achilles was high on his own supply, willing to sacrifice Patroclus on the altar of his like obsessive arrogance and his entitlement. Like, just because your mom was a sea nymph doesn't mean you can just do whatever you want. Like, you're beautiful and everything, but grow up.
Okay, wait, which was first, your Achilles tendon or this guy?
No, that's the thing. Like, so is it Ares that points Paris's arrow into?
I think it's Apollo.
I think you're right. It's Apollo. Apollo
is a
is a
and you can tell him I said so. You can tell him I said so.
He's absolutely a bitch. So he like directs Paris's arrow, because when Achilles was a baby, he got dipped into the river, and that gave him extra powers. But the place where they were holding on to him was his ankle.
Okay,
and so that part didn't get like magic on it.
Okay,
so that's the only place you could hit Achilles and kill him.
Yeah, so that's why we called it.
Like, it's Thetis's little sea nymph hand. Mm-hmm. Dipped him and made him immortal everywhere but there. Mm-hmm. Now, how he died from an air, like, I watched the guy on Survivor pop his Achilles, and he played, and then he got taken out like 2 days later. How Achilles died, I don't know, to be honest with you.
Okay, wait, is this Troy? Is that what Troy's about?
Yeah. Well, part of it,
It's mostly about the Trojan War, but yes.
But this happens
so
during
Brad Pitt is Achilles.
Yes.
Yes, he is.
That's why he has blinders up about Connor's story.
No, it's not why I have blinders on. I think Achilles stood on business. He was just like, look.
Unbelievable.
You were talking about the healthiness of boundaries, weren't you, Aaron?
Yes.
And Achilles put a boundary up. He's like, hey, if you take all my sex slaves, I'm not going to fight. And Agamemnon took his sex slaves.
He did.
So what do you expect Achilles to do?
Like, let his brothers in arms just die?
No. He was leverage. It's called leverage. And he was just like, look, I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to fight in this battle. But Agamemnon, you manipulated this Grecian alliance to fit your ends. That doesn't mean I have to be in your business. And
I appreciate that. It's just I wish he hadn't sacrificed Patroclus to do it.
He didn't. He didn't.
But he did.
No, he let Patroclus, or Patroclus, as I errantly called him.
I don't know.
Does anyone know? I don't know.
I don't know.
How to say that name. I think he let him, that's the truest form of love, isn't it? Letting people make their own decisions that may lead to their death.
Yeah.
No, he said, wear my armor. Just don't get close. Just don't get close to people. And Patroclus did.
Because he's a little soft boy. He doesn't know. He doesn't know how to do it.
He's a soft boy. Aaron, he got sent to juvie for murdering somebody. Like when
on
he was
accident.
Eight.
That
okay?
was accident.
Was it? Though?
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay, anyway, I just think that they're very toxic and I want better for them. As they run around the fields of Elysium or Hades or wherever they are now.
You think they're together?
That's in the in the Odyssey. They're together. They're actually together with the other guy that Achilles had a crush
threesome.
On.
Threesome.
Yeah, it is kind of a little threesome.
Listen, but he—I don't know if it's Achilles or Patroclus to Achilles, but they got the hardest kind of like. He's like, if in another life, in the dark, I would recognize you, even if like your butt was different and my face was different and you were deaf and I was blind, I'd still know who you are. Yeah. Like it was. It wasn't just a crush.
Very
it was
romantic.
Like, it was deep.
That's very romantic.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Back to me. Let's see. I'm going to go. I'm looking at my big board. I did make a top 25 big board because it is draft season, so I just wanted to be super prepared.
Sure.
I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to go love quadrangle toxic romance.
Okay.
And this is Peter Pan, Wendy, Darling,
yeah.
Captain Hook, and Tinkerbell. This is just a messy situation.
This is good.
This was on my short list.
Okay.
Yeah.
No matter where you look, like on the diagram, it's toxic because Peter's interested in Wendy, but not how she thinks. He doesn't want a love interest. He wants like a mom, which is a huge surprise. The guy who never wants to grow up just wants a woman to take care of him and make him pizza rolls.
Wow, like a lot of men now.
So that's not great. That's a little toxic. Wendy loves Peter. She clearly develops romantic feelings for him, and she wants Peter to grow up. But girl, this is a man from Neverland.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, how did you think this ends? You know, with him getting a steady gig and meeting your friends and like binging the newest season of Bridgerton. I don't think so. Tinkerbell to Peter. She's openly jealous of Wendy. In the cartoon, she tries to have him murdered. She like Wendy's flying and she rushes to Neverland and Lost Boys. She's like, hey, guess what, guys? There's a Wendy bird coming. And Peter specifically told me to tell y'all to shoot it down, which they try to do with their stupid slingshots, but they miss and she doesn't get murdered. Also, like Tinkerbell, you've been friend zoned from the jump. And unless you got some after dark fairy dust we don't know about, it's not happening because it can't happen. What, are you insane? Like, this just doesn't fit. And then Captain Hook, Peter Pan. Obviously, Hook is obsessed with Peter Pan. Their rivalry is could be a lifelong, like enemies to lovers fanfic if you really want it to be.
I believe that exists somewhere.
There's a part, if you look at it like in a certain way, it kind of feels a little bit like watching Trump and Mom Donnie before he got elected. And then when they got together and there's like,
listen, after he got elected too, like he still who has been invited to the White House more than Zora Mom Donnie?
So true.
It's like, God, I hate you so much. I think I love you actually. Like, what's happening here?
Can I throw an additional point to this now, Pentagon? What about Tiger Lily?
Okay.
She's Tiger in the Lily. Mix too.
Because
like Wendy's jealous of her. She wants Peter to like her, but Peter doesn't because Peter, again, just wants a mother. He doesn't want anyone. And then he almost sacrifices her.
Okay, let's broaden it out. I don't know. What is a 6-point? Is that a pen? That's not a pentagram. What's a
heptagram?
Hold on. Sextagon?
I don't know. TikTok croc.
Hexagon.
TikTok
croc's
clearly
hexagon.
Just, he is toying with Captain.
Yeah, Hook. Hexagon.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of a, maybe he's got a little Christian Grey in him. He's like, I want it to hurt a little bit, but I also love this. And this is great. Let's get into
it. This is a classic. This is a classic Lifetime movie. This is a classic TikTok drama where you have somebody who's like, I can change him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? And I can be who he needs me to be. This is a person who later becomes a trad wife and then realizes, oh, no, he's into his older enemy villain that he's been talking about for years. And then Tinkerbell, like, trying to murder her when she's like, Peter would like her murdered. Hit her with an arrow.
Yeah.
That's such a weird energy. Also, the fact that later Peter just forgets that Wendy's a person and moves on to her daughter.
Which is crazy.
It's not, though. Isn't that the most normal thing you've ever heard?
No, it's actually the most normal thing of being like, we dated and now I date Demi Moore's daughter.
Yeah, well, I just got the younger version of you. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's mine. So Jamie, back to you for back to back.
Okay, mine is like a Pentagon. But it is actually Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni and Colleen Hoover playing the toxic couple of Lily Bloom and Raul Kincaid from the book and movie adaptation of It Ends With Us by the aforementioned Colleen Hoover. They are all in a toxic relationship, both in real life and in literary life. Okay. So if you haven't read this book, great. Don't. Like, you'll be fine without it. Okay. Mm. It's pretty depressing. I would argue sometimes people try to trick me into saying that Colleen Hoover is an amazing writer.
Okay.
And I just read the prose and I go, no, I think she's a pretty good storyteller, but I don't know that she's a great writer. Like, I don't know that that's the thing. But again, because I would say you named a character, Lily Bloom, who's going to open a flower shop.
I love it. That's
and
great.
Then her domestic violent husband is named Ryle Kincaid. Like, he gets riled up.
Yeah. Well, and it helps me to know what these people do.
Like, it's right. Oh, and then the man she's really in love with is from her childhood who travels the world. His name is Atlas.
Yeah.
So I don't. Atlas it's very biblical, honestly.
It's helpful, Jamie. It's
I know.
Good.
I know. I do not love it. But also Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni, for those who don't know. And if we are the ones that are breaking this news to you, let us know. They have been embroiled in a federal lawsuit for literally over a year. And it goes to trial in May. Although the federal judge made them go to mediation because basically he was like, I swear to G, y'all cannot take this to jury. I'm not going to oversee this trial because now that all the discoveries come out and all of the depositions have been seen, like the judge is like, I don't think this is going to go the way anyone thinks it's going to go. So it gives vibes of like, you're not going to win this case, Blake. And you also suck, Justin. So let's not do this at all. But it's so interesting that you took two toxic people in a book and then the actors who portrayed them also end up in a very toxic relationship that is honestly costing taxpayers tens of thousands of dollars. That's so crazy. And then the rumor is that each of them have probably, based on hours and the attorneys they hired, they've probably each spent a total of $30 million in just legal expenses.
It's too much.
It's too much for a mediocre book. And I say that as a Colleen Hoover new movie is released in March, which some people are saying, gosh, if this had just been the first one, this would have been better. And Verity is being made. Colleen Hoover's going to be fine, but Colleen Hoover has had to navigate like, hi, you guys. Is it awkward that I'm still like a person? My bad. Did I know who to team with? I did not know. And also, Blake Lively's hair is frizzy for someone who has a hair brand. Anyway, that's fine. Yeah.
Well, shots fired there. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's a good one. Okay. And then back another one, Jamie?
Another one. Let me decide. Who do I hate the most?
The mysteries of the snake draft, always.
Okay.
Forever elude.
Okay. It's going to be, I'm going to take it back to a classic. We're going back to Brothers Grimm. Okay. And we are going to go with Sleeping Beauty. Okay. Oh, yeah. Also written by Charles Perrault. What's creepy about it? Obviously, she's been asleep. There's various stories of Sleeping Beauty, right? But the classic one is she's been asleep for 100 years. And he shows up and he's like, oh, you're hot. And then I'm going to marry you. She's not spoken. She's not talked about how she is anti-vax, or she's not talked about how she only likes chicken nuggets as her protein. None of the problematic things you would find in a lady, right? And so the problem is he kisses her while she's unconscious, which, fine, let's teach children consent early. Right? Let's help with that. But if you have older retellings, like there's a retelling of this story from like 1634 by Basile. And it's called The Sun, Moon, and Talia. Just let me give you some highlights from that version. Talia is Sleeping Beauty. So instead of a roar, roar, roar. Okay. Mm-hmm. Talia pricks her finger, falls asleep, and the king finds her asleep in the palace, right? And then the king just has sex with her while she's unconscious.
Oh, no.
And keeps doing it. And they have two children. And she has no agency. She's acted upon, obviously, and she ends up reuniting with that king after the two children are born. She gives birth to these twins while unconscious, which
I'm not opposed to that.
So that's the one highlight of the story. But can you imagine if you wake up from a coma and you're like, hey, girl, you doing okay? Okay, so Trump is president again. Or you don't even know who he is because it's been 100
years. But 100 years? And you'd be like, Baron Trump the fifth is president.
It'd be like, remember World War One? We've done another and we might be starting a third. So that's the first thing. Also, Connor Story is hot. We will introduce you to him. And you have had two kids and you're married to the king. But it's not like a cool king. It's like a bad king.
It's a bad guy.
Listen, so there's no consent. Basically, no courtship, no dialogue. She's a prize to the prince instead of like a partner, like we're in a relationship together. Also, she just has to go through all these life stages immediately. Like she just looks up and she's ballerina farm with nine kids. And she's like, oh, my God, what happened?
But she's also is she what, like 115? Is that how old she is?
Yeah, she's hot. Like yeah. she's young for, she looks good for her age.
Yeah.
Okay. And so anyway, like, and then of course you think, okay, well maybe we can make this work. No. The prince's mother is wicked, as all mothers in these stories are. Brothers Grimm, what was going on?
Well, your well, of course she's issue? Wicked. I don't, you don't, you can't have a perfectly good prince be like, man, I got everything going for me. You know what I should do? Go check out the princess who's been asleep for 100 years and is getting Nightcrawler date raped. Like yeah. that's insane. Of course he has an insane mom.
Yeah, he's not got a all, bad, like, not all women support women, because she does, in Peralt's story, does try to eat the princess and the children.
Oh,
that is an escalation that I don't know is necessary.
Yeah, that's not in that part. So I would say that if you're looking for a toxic, to be honest, fill in any Disney adaptation. Pocahontas, toxic. Aladdin, toxic. I mean, he's like catfishing you, and you're too
Aladdin
hot to
is
because he's like, I'm a prince.
I think it's like I think he's catfishing like pro wrestling's catfishing.
Okay,
it's like,
okay, I can
unless
see
you
that.
Eat boogers, you're convinced by this. He's like, I'm Prince Ali. We spent a steamy night together. Unless you pick your nose and eat it, I think you know the bit I'm doing right now. You know what I mean?
The thing about Aladdin is, like, it's just, like, he uses magic to, like, fall in love. But, that, like, he doesn't have real magic. Like, he's using magic to court her, but he doesn't have access to all full-time magic.
Yeah, like, that's dog, only we use filters magic. And stuff. And, like, guys post pictures of themselves, like, 10 years ago. Everyone's using magic that they got. You know what I mean?
That's well, true.
Jasmine was ready to leave her pet cat, Raja.
Listen, I know. Look,
just like,
listen,
at the
I
jump
know you
hat.
Have blinders for Achilles and Jasmine. I do know that. Yeah. I do recognize
you're
that.
Right, I do. You're damn right.
Okay.
It's back to me.
Back
it's back to
you.
To me. I'm going
it.
To
Good
do,
job.
Let's see. I think I'm going to go Joe Goldberg and all his love interests. This will be a triangle too. All his love interests and the audience. So Joe, his literal love interest in the book and the audience. And what I mean by that is, so I think Joe, like I was thinking, when you were talking, Jamie, I was thinking like, you know, everyone has their own definition of like what a toxic romance is. I think in my version, I need both to be a little at fault, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like that's important. And that's kind of where I think I was going most of the time. So for Joe, he's an interesting character. He's attractive. He is intellectual. He owns or works at a bookstore. I think he reads a lot. So as we all agree, that makes him morally superior.
Obviously.
Does he stalk and murder people? Yes, but he references like literary situations and stories. So it kind of makes it cool and fine, which everyone's okay with. I think his love interests, they are attracted to that like sensitivity and that intellectualism. And then at some points, you know, and I've more recently watched the show than I read the book. So forgive me if I'm misinterpreting this. I think at some point they all are faced with the realization that they are, that Joe is someone who is more in love with like love, like not the character love, but like the idea of love and romance than he is with them. And I think most of them kind of choose to like just deal with that and just be okay with that.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, that's a party foul on their point. But I think the real toxic romance in the triangle for me is between Joe and the reader, because I love the way, I can't remember the author's name, I'm sorry, the way she uses him as the narrator. It's very intimate. It's very like conspiring. You know, everyone loves like a fourth wall break. Everyone loves like when the narrator feels like they're talking directly to you, and she uses that really well. And he's obviously a monster. And he does worse and worse things to push us in our adoration, or, you know, just, respect of the protagonist of him. But it does feel like we are willing to tolerate him because he reads books. And I don't know if it's the lack of like well-read literate men, are just like, ah, you know, sometimes they kill people. I don't know what to tell you, but they've read, you know, East of Eden or something, and that's fine. And we'll be okay with that.
And Joe is, I think it's Caroline Kepnes is the author. I don't like that it's told in second person because that makes it creepier. Like it is like, cause it's you, like it's always, I'm obsessed with you.
Yeah.
Like he's always talking about me and that he's going to steal my jewelry and keep it. Yeah. And he's going to manipulate me. And he's guessed my passwords. How did you guess my password?
It's all that reading.
It's all that. And I am a simple girl, you know, like like I am going to make that code my birth year. So I don't know what to tell you. But but he's so hot. Like, especially in the edit. Penn Badgley. Penn Badgley does a great job.
God, great job, you know, so good.
Like being creepy, but like you're like, I'm still into it a little. Yeah.
Yeah. But I like that. I like the complicity of the audience to be like, but he's so nice and smart and he thinks about his feelings and he thinks about your feelings.
While he's
murdering
you.
He reads.
And listen, he doesn't just assume that because you're uncomfortable that it doesn't mean that you're actually just playing hard to get.
Yeah.
That's not bad, right?
That's fine.
He's persevering.
That's right. Okay, Aaron, back to you for your back-to-back.
Okay, these are my last two, I think. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go June and Athena from Yellowface by R.F. Kuang. So
that's a good one.
So June is like obsessed with Athena. Athena's a better writer than she is. She gets like fellowships. She gets articles. She gets reviews. And Athena... Knox. So what happens is they become friends, but they're like not really friends because June is like just kind of obsessed with her. And Athena is too cool to have friends. She's like this ethereal, like cool girl kind of a thing. Anyway,
she's got guy friends.
Yeah, she's got guy friends. Yeah. So Athena chokes to death one night in front of June her house. Okay. And while she's waiting for the paramedics to show up, June is like, this is the perfect opportunity for me to steal Athena's manuscript, her unpublished manuscript, and pass it off as my own, which she does to great acclaim. But also, like, some people are like, hey, this is so fishy. Like, you are not this good of a writer. And then all of a sudden, Athena dies. And then all of a sudden, you write something that's very Athena-like. And this is not adding up. So, like, it completely... And like even after Athena dies, June is just obsessed with her. Like she sees her everywhere. She sees her ghost everywhere. She's haunted. Like, and there, you know, there's a reason for that. But like she's constantly paranoid. She can't stop thinking about her. She's like destined to live her life in this cycle of spinning the truth for her own gain. And it just ultimately takes over her entire existence. And Athena isn't even there.
Listen, and the best part is, I mean, if you want to look for like the real, because it's hard because Athena, when you're reading the book, you're like, ugh, Athena is not likable at all.
No, not
like, she's horrible. But then you realize at one point, because this book is about World War I, Chinese laborers during World War I, and Athena is Asian. Like, she is Asian. June is not.
Yes.
And June ends up, the publisher's like, it is time for you to write about people that you're not, if it's fiction. So we're just going to rename you Juniper Song.
And they like, yeah. So like, she kind of has this like vaguely Chinese name.
Yeah.
And so she tries to kind of pass off as Chinese, but she's not.
Yeah.
But like, oh, will it? I don't know if it'll really matter.
That's insane to me that pre like World War I, that they were like, look at here, see? Like, you're not Asian, so that's going to be a problem.
No. The book that Athena writes is about World War I.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes.
It's and modern times.
So that she steals, the manuscript that she steals.
The manuscript that she steals.
I was like, guys, I just don't think they cared. It seems like they didn't
care. That, like, she's written all these cultural references in it, and it's like, are those accurate? Because you're super white.
Yeah.
You're super white. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so, no. They're accurate. They're totally accurate, authentic. Don't worry about
it. Can you imagine if you were writing a book and it was like, we need you to feel more Middle Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to need you to change your name from Kirsten to something vaguely like, we need you to be like Vanessa. What's her face? Married to Nick Lachey.
Vanessa Lachey.
The Doritos girl?
Oh, yeah.
No. Allie? Wow. Is it Allie?
That's Allie. But no, Vanessa Lachey. But what was her name?
Milano. Mm. Is that right?
Stay with that thought.
Hold on.
There's an Alyssa Milano.
Oh, maybe that's what I was... Marcel? Vanessa?
Marano?
Vanessa Lachey.
It is Vanessa Manila.
That's
close to Manila. To Milano.
You were good. You were right. You were right.
But Vanessa Manila, all I remember ever is that she was, remember when she was on 30 Rock and they were like, we love her because she's vaguely something and we don't know what she is.
Ethnically ambiguous.
Yeah. So that's what happens to Jean.
I do like, I don't know how realistic they are, but I do like books where you could, it's extremely like writer centric where it's like, there's a manuscript that's gold, even though nobody knows what's going to make money in publishing right now, unless it's just like hot fairy romantic sex, romanticy stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're sitting on that, then I'm interested. But it reminds me of The Plot by
Know if
it's Jean Hanf Corlett. I'm sure I mangled that. It's like a series where some like a writing teacher reads the story of a student and is like, that's going to be the biggest book ever. The student mysteriously dies. And the teacher comes into possession of it, and hijinks ensue. But it almost reminded me a little bit of A Separate Piece, that relationship between Jean and Finney of like one's clearly superior, one aspires to it, is a little jealous, and then something tragic happens. And I always love that dynamic.
Yeah, you'd like this book, I think, for sure. And then my last one, I just don't feel like you can have an episode like this and not talk about the OG toxic relationship of all time, Romeo and Juliet. Like, babies, you are 14. What are you doing?
Makes sense. They're 14.
I know, but I want them to have one conversation with a trusted adult caregiver. That's all I want. Like, just one. That would be fine. I also think if you haven't seen your potential partner like interact with a waiter or have a headache or be mildly inconvenienced, maybe you should wait. Maybe you should wait until your parents die or, you know, or you're out of the house, Juliet. Y'all are 14. What are you doing? Stop it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so bad. And like, I know we all, like everybody knows like this isn't a romance, like it's not a romance, but it's constantly put up as romantic.
What do you mean it's not a romance? It's a romance.
It's not a romance. It's a tragedy.
Shakespeare didn't write it to be a romance, but it's been interpreted as a romance.
But they're not in love. Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes were in love.
But like, no, they're like in crush, in like obsessive crush.
Puppy love is a big deal to the puppies.
Well, the puppies die. So they
all puppies die eventually. I know. Like all dogs die.
No, all dogs go to heaven.
Yeah.
All puppies don't die. That's not a policy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But early, like, I think Romeo's, like, talking about Rosalind or Rosaline or whatever.
He's like, I really wish I was still with
her. I got big plans for her. And there's, like, cut to, oh, no. So it's, like, Shakespeare's sending it up of, like, you know, just how insane
ridiculous
young people are.
This is. Yeah. So it was, it like negative points to humanity who have interpreted this as a romance when it is actually a stupid tragedy.
That's a good one.
Like
that's
dumb kids doing dumb things.
Dumb kids doing dumb things. That's the subtitle.
Let dumb kids do dumb things. Don't make that your thing in life. Similarly, you pick Ruby. I was like, we got to have some fundamentals here, right? We have to have some basic rubric. So I'm going with The Very Hungry Caterpillar in consumption.
Obviously.
Toxic relationship in that book. Because The Very Hungry Caterpillar tells children on page one, throughout, and via finger holes that ask you to finger the hole while you tell the kid the story that what is the organizing principle of growth and transformation? Consumption. You eat, you consume, you consume, you consume. And then after all that consumption, you transform. All you got to do is consume and you will become a beautiful butterfly. That's insane. In college, we studied is the theory of conspicuous consumption by this economist guy. And it's basically like people engage in conspicuous consumption. We, like you buy fancy things to demonstrate wealth and social privilege. And everyone knows that that behavior isn't super satisfying, but we do it out of desire. We consume out of desire for other people to be like, look at how much they're consuming. Isn't that incredible? They must be elite people or so wealthy or rich or whatever. And I think that's what The Very Hungry Caterpillar is doing. It is encouraging us just consume, 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 and then you will become where that's actually like not how you transform or become anything lovely like a butterfly. You just become someone who hates yourself and wants to get off screens.
That's actually so true. Like, that's crazy, Knox. You're right. Yeah. That's,
isn't it?
That's insane.
It
I never
nuts.
Thought about it that way. I thought it was just like Gila's snack boy.
Everyone gets hung up on the fingering the holes and they're just, they don't see beyond that. But I'm here to tell you, get beyond the finger in the holes and look at the message. And that'll disrupt you a little bit.
What do you think about Eric Carle's, the rest of his collection.
Oeuvre.
Yeah.
Thank you. What about the Very Busy Spider? Are you pro Very Busy Spider?
I am a very busy spider, and that has not brought me happiness. I need to not be so busy, because busyness isn't a value. You're not valuable because you're busy. Mm-hmm. You're busy because you're valuable, I guess. That's like the message, but I don't think that's what Eric's saying. And are there, do you finger holes in that one, or is that one?
I don't think so. I think caterpillar is the only finger hole, is what I remember.
I don't know anything about Eric. And Eric, if you're listening, I'm sorry. But if he showed up Nesting Files, I wouldn't be like, that's weird. I'd be like, no, that tracks.
Yeah, that'd be, you'd be like, that makes, it's like the person who ever wrote The Velveteen Rabbit. You're like, that's toxic also.
That is also toxic.
That's very toxic.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Okay, Jamie, your last one?
Yes, my last one. This is very difficult because I really want to do, Tom and Dickie from The Talented Mr. Ripley, because that is toxic, but that is mostly Tom. You know, Dickie's like, oh, do you like me? Oh, wait, why are you murdering me? Like, so it's pretty, they're not, I don't feel like Dickie is contributing to the toxicity.
I'll push back a little bit and just say, I think Dickie is like, ooh, new toy. Because they have that line of when Dickie's attention on you is like the sun, like when the sun shines on you. Mm-hmm. And then when he turns away, it's like you're in the shade
so
again.
Cold.
Yeah.
That's how Jennifer Garner described her divorce from Ben Affleck in a Vanity Fair article.
Right? I believe that.
But so what I am going to choose, I am actually going to stick with Rob from High Fidelity by Nick Hornby. Mm, and his toxic relationship is with anyone he dates from childhood until now. And the adaptation, which Knox and I love. Aaron, have you watched the TV show High Fidelity?
No, but I have seen the movie with John Cusack.
The movie's great.
Perfect. So we got a movie with John Cusack. I actually also love the Hulu show with Zoe
Kravitz.
Thank you. I was like, Deschanel Kravitz? No. That's a different person. So, Zoe Kravitz, who plays Robin. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they're all problematic. So as you know, in the book, Rob, this is Nick Hornby also, by the way, being like, this is kind of about my life, sort of. So he uses, it's High Fidelity because he's kind of revisiting these five breakups in his life and he's ranking them like albums. Okay. And he's all these musical references. Right. But, and he says it's, by the way, in the book, he says, these are my five most humiliating breakups, which implies many more breakups that are not as humiliating, where he was like, I was into that breakup, but these are the worst ones. And we have the one, we have Allison, we have Penny. And then we get like Jackie, where at first you're like, well, Jackie cheated on him. Right. And then that guy beats up Rob. Right. Yeah. And so, but Rob,
is this the Tim Robbins character in the movie?
Yes. God, and so Rob still feels like, though, that it's like, I lost the breakup because I wasn't able to beat up that guy. Like, I wasn't able to beat up that guy, which is stupid. That's just stupid. And then, of course, there's Charlie, the cool girl who dumps him. And then there's Sarah, the emotional collapse breakup. But the thing I will say about Rob is, first of all, let me talk about what Rob's issue is. A, doesn't go to therapy. Okay. Mm. And that's crazy because he's so obsessed with the past as a person. It's my least favorite quality is time hop. If that's the only thing you post on the internet is time hop. Mm. Like, we got to live sometimes now, like in the present. But he's obsessed with the past. He is actually the victim and the villain. So he's in a toxic relationship with himself in terms of how to be in romance, very insecure, constantly trying to change himself to meet, like constantly masking to be whoever people need him to be, always blaming, oh, but it was that guy, it was her. Listen, if you can list and write a whole book about five humiliating breakups, some of those were your fault, okay? Never able to invest, does not like to communicate. And even when he goes back and interviews these exes, he's still really bad at talking to them about the realities of their relationship, even though it's over. It's so problematic. And the problem is, when you're watching High Fidelity, you're like, ah, John Cusack. He's dreamy. Like,
he's so cute in that movie.
Yeah. So cute. He's so charming. But let me tell you, that guy is also going to be the worst. He's the Peter to your Wendy. And despite the fact that it's a great lyric and a great Taylor Swift song, it's not what you want. Mm-mm. It's not what you want.
There's an old Raylan Givens quote. You run into an in the morning, you ran into you run into assholes all day. Guess what? You're the
you're the asshole. And that is for sure Rob from High Fidelity. So, alas.
When Jack Black sings at the end of High Fidelity and you didn't know because first time you watched it, you didn't know he sang. I was like, what?
What is happening? Blazes
is this?
What? Yeah. And now all I want to hear is Jackbox sing, like, that's all true. The time. I do love it.
So good.
I
Tenacious do love D. Him. Yeah. Okay, Aaron, any also-rans?
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of an obvious one, but Edward and Bella, like, he's constantly reminding her how lucky she is that he hasn't eaten her. Like, that's crazy. He cuts, he takes the engine out of her car.
He wasn't going to eat her. He was just going to kill her.
Yeah, well, okay.
Same. He's that a killer. Reads
like, it reads like Dax Shepard or Kristen Bell posting about Dax Shepard on her birthday.
So glad I haven't murdered you. Tom and Daisy Buchanan, y'all just get a divorce. Like, get a divorce. Captain Ahab and the whale, y'all are obsessed with each other. And then the boy in the tree in the Giving Tree, the most toxic.
The OG one.
Just an OG one. Yeah, absolutely.
That's good. That's a good one.
Jamie, what about you?
Listen, my only other one that I hadn't already mentioned is PETA and Katniss and readers who are obsessed with PETA and Katniss. You're also in a toxic relationship. These people are only together because of political strife. Like, they're just trying to survive being murdered within the Capitol. They're just trauma bonded. You're not going to be able to build a relationship off of this. Plus, I mean, but he's not even the hot one. He's not the hot one.
But the hot one murdered her sister.
Yeah. Oh. The hot one created war crimes.
Yeah.
So, aren't they like the manifestation of Love in a Hopeless Place? Like, that's them.
Yeah. No. It's between love and obligation and feeling like, well, we formed an alliance so that we can live. But listen, Katniss deserves better than... Do I want someone to make me
sourdough around, baby. Every week? There's not a lot better.
Like, I like sourdough every week, but listen, if somebody comes in from a hard day at work and starts painting themselves to look like a rock, I'm going to be like, you got to get different hobbies, baby.
That was survival. He started a garden.
Okay. Listen, he does that on Thursdays. Like, he goes to a club and comes
sometimes
home.
Sometimes your spouse or your partner has weird hobbies and you let him cook, okay?
That's right.
Because they're loving.
Because they're loving and wonderful, and that's their mental health journey.
That's their mental health journey.
Okay, great. I guess paint shoes.
Can you imagine the post-traumatic stress disorder that both of these two people will live with for the rest of their life? And then they'll parent with it? Because neither of these people are going to therapy. Like, they eat squirrels. You can't.
Yeah,
don't think the ruins of District 7 had therapy.
Just because you don't have therapy doesn't mean you don't need it.
Maybe the finger painting and the gardening is therapy,
maybe
Jamie.
That's what they can do. They're just doing what they can with what they have.
Wow, the standards are so low. Knox, what are your also-rans?
Most of them have been mentioned. I wanted to throw in Dante and Beatrice.
Sure, of course.
Didn't know her, but he was just like, I guess I'm going to go to hell for you. We spoke twice. Let's do it.
Have you ever had a connection with somebody like that where you're like, oh, I would do anything for you?
Maybe, but it's like... But descending into the, like, seeing Satan frozen in the
bottom of
hell.
I would see Satan frozen for Pedro Pascal if he'd be like, I will hang out with you once a week if you will
you
go to hell
You think Trump would
me.
Do that for Mom Donnie? He'd be like,
yeah, 100%.
I burn for you, dog. Let's go see this thing. okay, that's going to do it for this episode of Shelf Respect.
Okay, don't forget, everything we talked about is in the show notes, and we would love to see you talk about it too, either on Instagram at ReadWithShelfRespect or on Patreon at patreon.com/shelfrespect.
Ask your pointed questions, declare your intentions, or start a respectful fight in the comments with one of your enemies just to eventually become lovers.
I'm Jamie Golden. You can find me on the internet at Jamie B. Golden.
I'm Erin Moon. You can find me on the interwebs at Erin H. Moon.
I'm Knox McCoy. You can find me on the socials at Knox McCoy. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
What?
Oh, the end. Sorry.
How dare you?